This is a production of Cornell University.
February 19th, 2009, Student Assembly Meeting.
Here.
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 Please excuse.
Here.
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 Here. Living. What did you say?
Despite what you might hear in the sun, I am alive.
All set?
Oh, Smith is excused. Stein is excused. He is not going to be present.
He's a liaison.
Okay, thank you. All right, at this point, we will conduct the open microphone. Anyone in the audience who would like to bring anything to the NSA's attention that is not currently on the agenda, please do so now. All right, all set. Moving, what? Oh, I'm sorry. And before that, we have approval of the minutes from February 12th, 2009. It's been a call for acclamation. Is there a second?
Second.
Any dissent? Minutes have been approved. We have a moment of silence for the hydraulic flap. And, all right, we're done. That was the exec board's lame attempt at a joke. Now, moving on to announcements and reports, we have an elections update by Director McDermott.
So I was going to start with an official apology to Tony and Emily, but now since I'm going to Emily, because Tony made enough statements about it today. Emily, I'm sorry you're having fun today. But more importantly, what was published in the sign is correct. We do have a record number of at-large candidates this year. We have a total of 45 candidates for SA and UMA. There are two unopposed races and three races that will not be filled this spring. That means in the fall, they will go for election in the fall. In comparison to past years, the spring of 2008, between SA and UA, there were 26 candidates, six races unopposed, and in the spring of 2007, there were only 24 candidates with eight unopposed races. We are almost back to where we were in 2006 when we allowed tickets, and that was one of the highest numbers of candidates on campus ever, with 56 candidates. So we're moving back towards a very competitive election. Tomorrow is the mandatory campaign meeting. All candidates will receive an email reminding them that they must be there. Receive excuses from three candidates. If you haven't sent me an excuse and you believe you have an excuse, please send it to me. But there will be updates at this mandatory campaign meeting with changes to the election calendar and more events being added to the calendar. So please make sure that if you're a candidate, you attend this meeting so that you can follow all of the rules and the calendar and not be eliminated from the election. Best of luck.
Okay. You said the location and...
It is 163 Day Hall, and it's 5 p.m.
Okay, and as always, NSA representatives that would like to attend can. Any questions for Mike? Okay, great. Do you have a question?
No.
Okay, moving on. Thank you. We have a residential and community life committee update by Representative Kumar.
Thank you. We had our meeting last Monday. So a couple of things that we went over. First of all, we went looking for volunteers for the guide committee, which essentially looking at ways to reduce operating costs at the university. Basically, there was some student input. So anybody here on the Red Flag committee, or really anybody, just for me, if you're interested in providing student input about how to potentially reduce costs on campus. We also got an update about the housing lottery. Apparently there is a lot of lack of interest in the program housing this year. So they're really trying to ramp up interest in that, especially among freshmen. If you're a freshman especially, I encourage your friends to apply to the program and encourage them to sign up for the lottery even if they haven't decided to concrete and women who are not. Just sign up for the lottery, gives you the option to select your remembering selection in March. Another project we're looking at is to look at ways that our committee can sort of follow through on the housing lottery after it's over. So we're looking at ways to utilize either an in-person forum or an online forum so that students after they connect to their rooms during the break and give feedback about how the process works, how the information is going, and things like that. So that's something we'll have for the future. And finally, today I got an email from the off-campus housing office talking about a program regarding tenants and rights and responsibilities on March 9th and 4 p.m. I was also going to email about that. And I guess they're looking into the essay and to our committee to publicize it a little bit.
Thank you. Any questions for Hill? Okay. We have a CIT committee update by Representative Hines.
So if you remember back last semester when Paula McClure came to the assembly, she was talking about RIA 7, the preset of letters that students are getting now, and we wanted to sort of come up with a way to educate students. The last time students get preset of letters, don't really know what to do, what it's turning into.
Great. Thank you, Mike, for following up on that important issue. Any questions for Mike? Nico?
I think the RIA is not suing people. Like, I don't think they sued this strategy over the thing in like January.
If it's true or not, because I don't know if the RIA would talk about that, but nonetheless, I think it would be good anyway to get these statistics or anybody who's interested in that. I mean, even educate people who just want to know the risks about early family and whether or not they're doing
it. Any other questions? For Mike. Okay, thank you, Mike. We have a university bias-related incident protocol by Representative Kumar and Taylor.
So last semester Brandon and I talked to a lot of people regarding the bias-related incident protocol on campus. Currently, right now, there's a program where, you know, I believe if an RA sees or another student sees, if anybody sees or experiences a bias-related incident, there's a whole procedure to go ahead and report that. There's a lot of people saying that program relies mostly on information gathering rather than resolving problems. So Randy and I are just kind of looking for a small group of students to just kind of explore that and explore the current state that protocol. So if anybody's interested in kind of taking it on, just give us your names and we'll get into the next couple of weeks.
Great. Thank you. Any questions for Brandon and Phil? Okay. We have an SA newsletter announcement by VP Jules.
Guys, you probably all got my multiple emails. Sorry about that. Basically, the newsletter has been completed, and I would really appreciate it if you guys could help me distribute it, just send it to different organizations, maybe within your college or within your constituency. That would really help broaden up for the website, so it'll be available there as well. So thank you.
Any questions for Ricky? All right, we have a Zimri update by VP Miller.
So as Greg reported last week, we purchased the Zimri contract with John Zimmer. However, after talking with Peggy Beach, We realized that we're in need of an administrative unit to help us do the administrative work that's involved with it. Tomorrow, Ryan and myself and anyone else who would like to come, we're going to a transportation advisory committee meeting in Day Hall boardroom at 12:15. Hopefully we will get more positive feedback from them, and hopefully a transportation can hop on with us and we can get this thing rolling.
Any questions about Zimride for Tony? Okay. We have a first annual summit for international women's issues in global health and development announcement by Representative Capella.
All right, Brian pretty much summed that all up. But, one of my ID Council members, C.C. Hoggard, is hosting the first annual summit on international women's issues in global health and development on March 7th. It's going to take place, I believe, in the Biotech Center. It's going to be from 9 a.m. in the morning until 9 p.m. in the evening. So a bunch of different great speakers. There's a website. I'll forward that out to you guys soon. I actually think Natalie Rasmussen talks to the Women's Issues Committee. Do you have any questions?
Any questions for Alex? All right. Thanks, Alex. Any further announcements or reports that are not, that haven't been reported to Chris? Yep.
Yes, actually,
I
have a similar note. They're doing an LGBTQ conference potentially at some point. They're deciding right now when and where that's going to be exactly. I believe it's come down to three or four schools, Harvard, and another one. And so if you're interested, I guess the whole point of this in going or in participating in discussions or anything like that, just let me know and I'll keep you posted on what's going on.
Thank you. Any questions for Eric? Okay, any further announcements or reports? Okay, moving on to business of the day. just a correction, it's not a resolution. That was my apologies. You have a letter that should be in front of you that looks like this. A letter of expectations to bond funded groups. You just received this today and not last night, so what I'm going to do quickly is just read it over. We discussed this last week. This is the letter that will be going out to bond funded groups that lays out our expectations for them when they file their bond funding applications this spring and then their final applications in the fall. So if you have, please read along with me. If you have any grammatical errors, just note them down and talk to me at the end. But otherwise, any objections to any of the content or suggestions, that's what I'm bringing this to you all for before I send it out. Executive Boards of Bilingual Funded Groups, on behalf of the 2008-2009 Student Assembly, I'd like to thank you for your leadership and programming that contributes to improving quality of life for Cornell undergraduates. Sorry, for anyone in the audience, there are copies up there on the table if you'd like. The undergraduate community at Cornell is grateful to have the Student Leadership and Student Activity Advising Network to run successful programs and initiatives. As the 2010-2011 and 2011-2012 byline funding cycle approaches and you begin to prepare your byline funding applications, we would like to lay out some clarifications and expectations to ensure the efficiency of the SA setting of the student activity fee this fall 2009. This year, we are asking all groups to submit a preliminary application or letter of intent by noon on April 27, 2009. This letter of intent will include the amount your organization will be requesting for your byline funding application. The actual application, complete with all the budget information, will be due to the Student Assembly by noon on September 11, 2009. Please find all application material and information on our website. This timeline will allow the Student Assembly to perform some aggregate planning of the student activity fee during the spring 2009, while at the same time allowing byline funded organizations the appropriate time to gather budget information after the fiscal year ends on June 1st and regroup early in the fall semester 2009. Due to the university's recent financial constraints, the Student Assembly has adopted the following set of expectations for every byline funded organization in their SAF request. In an effort to control the student activity fee in a way that does not negatively affect the current level and quality of programming for byline funded groups, we are asking for any requested increases in the byline funding allocation to exclusively compensate for a decrease in funding from university departments or any other sources of revenue. In other words, the Student Assembly adopted the standard of awarding SAF increases only to compensate for lost revenue. Theoretically, there will be no expansion of programming for the next byline funding cycle, but a maintenance of the level of quality of programming. Please keep these expectations in mind when filing your SAF funding application. Again, I appreciate your cooperation and dedication to improving the life of Cornell graduates despite any financial constraints that we might face. Please contact me with any questions or concerns I have. So there it is. Speaker's list is now open. Representative Craig.
I decided, as I was reading over this and thinking this is something we were talking about last week, in the second paragraph, for organizations that do not actually submit the preliminary application or the letter of intent, is there a penalty to them?
Yeah, that's part of their application. They will have to do that. Let me clarify a few things, and also let me just explain first. We're voting on this today in Appendix A. So I guess that wording and that content will be contingent upon what we vote upon later. Is that correct?
We're discussing it in Appendix A.
We're discussing it, charging. We're discussing it and then voting on it next week. But essentially, DNR, please chime in whenever I'm saying something wrong. Previous filing funding cycles, they need to have their applications in the spring semester. And there, at that meeting that I was telling you all about, that Greg and I went to, there was concern from the advisors and bylaw funded groups that that's not enough time. The fiscal year ends in June, and so it's all essentially projections, and they have to change things once they come to fall and present. It was inefficient. So that's what this timeline does. It still allows us to see what people will be applying for, but nothing official until their September budget, and therefore it represents what they spent, and they're on projections. But it is mandatory.
And the other thing was in the third paragraph, I guess, one thing that I mentioned last week was that newer groups on campus that have previously, asked for a certain amount. Is there some way that we could say, for groups that have extenuating circumstances that obviously have grown because of their, their membership has grown, something of that nature? It just sounds like we don't want to see any growth at all in this paragraph. Mm-hmm. And perhaps if there was a way to communicate that sort of, unless it shows this demonstrated need, then,
yeah. Well, I guess two things I'd say to that. One, perhaps if we can change that line of, no expansion of programming, because, if one of the bylaw-funded organizations makes a bunch of cuts, and then they still could theoretically be expanding if they manage to make some cuts in areas they don't need. So that perhaps isn't accurate for our expectation, but in terms of what was the first part? Oh, for new groups that would petition to be bylaw-funded groups, this wouldn't apply to them.
So I was just saying, so say that there's a group that has been operating for 10 years and they've obviously been doing programming, a lot of programming, versus a new group in 2006 or 2000 or whatever that just started and, they only have 5 members, so they only put on 1 program, but now that this is their next filing cycle and they have 1 member, just by nature of they've grown,
right?
And they want to learn more about them. So I'm saying just so that we don't penalize newer groups compared to older groups that have been doing things for a long time.
Right. I understand that, and I guess if you're spelling out more like exceptions and new groups versus older groups, it becomes less of a standard. This is a letter of expectation. This isn't a resolution. We're not putting it in the charter, and it's a new assembly next year. So really, the new assembly next year could really just throw this out. This isn't an end all be all at all. I would say. These bylaw-funded groups know what they're doing in terms of their finances and in terms of what, if they need it because they need to support this incredible demand, they're still going to apply for it. I could certainly put in there, exceptions will be entertained by the student assembly, but I almost think that's inherent. But I can add a line of that if you think that addresses it.
I'd appreciate if there was some sort of line. I'm not saying that we're saying there are always exceptions to the rule, but just some way to get in at that. It just sounds like there's nothing at all that can be done, mm-hmm. at least from this letter.
Sure. I can add on. And I guess I'm not going to send this out until after next week anyway, realizing we have to vote on Appendix B, which won't happen until next week. So I'll have another Appendix A, so I'll have another final draft for you, and I'll put that in. Anyone else? Oh, Representative Andrews. Keep your hand up, because I haven't made the list.
I mean, this is nitpicking, but
that's okay.
The theory of there will be no special program, maybe you want to do monetary expansion.
I'm going to strike that line, because it's explained in there before, and that doesn't sound nice. So I'll strike that line. Representative Dykoff.
It's kind of, you just trick it, which is what I was going to say, but I can leave it in and just kind of say, combine those things. What you just explained, how, like, any expansion program should take place through the group's own internal cost of shipping and funding system.
Spell that out.
Yeah, today, like, we're going to be seven billion. So we go monetary expansion, but we encourage expansion through your group's internal efforts to utilize cuts in shipping and funding. I don't know.
Okay.
Like
yeah. Yeah. BP Basil.
I guess this is somewhat a question for Appendix A later, but is the letter of intent on April 27th, is that a hard and fast allocation request? They can't deviate from that?
No, that's a projection. Ari can...
address the question?
Yeah.
Thank you, Ari.
Thanks.
First of the camera.
So, this letter is finally got all, but if for some reason or another the stimulus funding next year decides to, you know, make this letter not employed, so how much time would student organizations have to apply to work on this? This is kind of that's like a feeling.
I mean, I would say they don't. It's hard to answer that question.
What was it?
So, do you want to repeat one more time?
Hold on.
Yeah, so if for some reason the student assembly decides to do away with this letter, how much time would the byline funding have to, you know, apply for more funding?
can I answer this?
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing to take into consideration is what stipulates the byline funding process is Appendix A. So whatever we put in Appendix A, regardless of a letter that's kind of a sense of body thing, doesn't really matter at all. It's kind of a good faith gesture on our part to say, hey, we're trying to do our part. Make sure you do your part in this process. Appendix A is the document that governs that process. So whatever we decide to put in Appendix A at the end of next week, that's what will guide them into how much time they'll have, not the letter. Does that make sense?
Right. So right now, a group can just, you know, submit their application with all these requests for increases. You know, this is also, as you were saying, a sense of buy. I wrote this letter as a request from the byline funded organization's advisors. You know, they want it, you know, they're hearing is, well, budgets are being cut 5% this year, now next year, now the year after. You know, they want to know, the SAF is going to be cut, you know, what's going on. So they wanted some level of some set of expectations, and it's going to be very clear exactly that none of this is binding, but it's sort of, you know, as a community we should come together and make the best, be as fiscally responsible as we can. I should have said this in the beginning also, you know, knowing with this new timeline, assuming we discussed Appendix A, that, you know, there's going to be some more opportunity for the student assembly to have some aggregate planning of the student activity fee. It hasn't really been like that in years past as much. And you know, we have to be conscious of the fact that when there's an increase in student activity fees and there's an increase in the financial aid budget of the university, and there's an increase in all the other shared costs and all the other. So that's, you know, that's why we're trying to be as responsible with this as we can. Is there anyone else that can speak to us again on the speaking list? Okay, that concludes that discussion. Thank you for your feedback. Moving on to unfinished business, we have Resolution 23 and the three changes, BP Mezzi. Any questions? Speak with us now, open. Sorry, this is discussion and debate. It's not just questions. Representative Stallone.
Yeah, I remember bringing this up last year as well. So why are we stipulating that Minds Matter should report its activities at the end of the year and not all the groups?
I believe that was because they were a new group, it was a new organization, so we wanted to make sure that since they were a newly funded by my funded organization, that we just kept, I don't want to say closer eyes, but we had more contact with them, so we could make sure we addressed any issues that they were having and that they were understanding how to properly use their allocation and things like that.
That's exactly right. That's what was discussed last semester when it should have gone in. Anyone else? Or any motions? Any motions?
Acclamation.
For the call for acclamation, is there a second? Second. Any dissent?
You have to do a vote? Yeah.
No, it's charter change. I'll go to the vote. Will the clerk please call the roll after a closing of 30 seconds? Done.
Yes.
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 Yes. Okay, thank you very much. Thanks, Greg. Okay. Moving on to new business, we have Resolution 24, Appendix A changes, PP Mezzi.
So the Appendix A changes need to happen, in my personal opinion, after discussing with several members of the The Assembly has not filed something in part to the change process and subsequent details year fall semester 2005 and 2007. Advisors have settled by some organizations have expressed concerns about the practical application of the process provided in the United States. We have therefore resolved that the Assembly adopt the modifications in the United States indicated in the cash draft with deletions and strike through and insertions otherwise. Be it finally resolved the President of the Student Assembly and the President of the University. We kind of go through page by page if you want for maybe a couple minutes to note some of the substantial changes. Some of the strikers don't get really nervous that like a lot of stuff was taken out, but what we did was we just there was a lot of wasted words basically, so we just tried to condense those into more bullet points and more concise language. So that's a big part of the strike through parts aren't drastic changes. The procedure it lays out the process that we just talked about with the deadline, and if you look at A3, there are some page limits that we had discussed and decided to put in because last year our review was verified a little bit above
somewhere between $1,000 and $2,000.
I copied the paper for the budget process because all the budget packets that needed to be produced for the Appropriations Committee and all those budget packets that needed to be produced again for the FA, and then people forgot and so you had to have additional packets the next week and people didn't show up for the meeting ran long. So there was an incredible amount of delay. So some of the page limits are put in there. We are discussed with the advisors of those organizations to say, hey, we really could realistically could do this in this number of pages because it forces them to have just as precise language as we want them to do to really get the kind of meat and potatoes of the story. So some of that has been added go through. You can see in the first section, in section A, changes about page limits again and what things to do. One of the other changes too in B is the Appropriations Committee will meet with these groups separately. You do anywhere between 3 and 4 depending on the group per week, and then we'll decide and report the action of the committee to the Assembly. When one of the other procedural changes is that the week before the Appropriations Committee meets with that group, the budget packets will be sent out electronically to the members of the Assembly so they can have a chance to review them before the Appropriations Committee. If they have any questions or concerns, they can come to the Assembly meeting, or they can come to the Appropriations Committee meeting, ask those questions there, submit those questions if they're unable to make it to be asked on their behalf. And one of the other hopes that we're trying to do is change the balance of Assembly members to non-Assembly members on the Appropriations Committee so that it becomes more heavily staffed with FA members. So it's FA members appropriated with some other undergraduate students as a part of it. What we're hoping to do there is that the Appropriations Committee will come back and report their action. Then, if a member of the Assembly does not agree with the action, they can motion to disapprove the action of the committee. It can be carried up, and then the following week, the group that they would like to question the allocation amount of or their budget information will be called in the following meeting. They can ask questions at basically another budget hearing. One of the logic behind this was there's really no point for an Appropriations Committee or vice versa for the Student Assembly if the decisions are going to be made twice and it's just going to be too big long budget here. Trying to streamline the process. The last time this was done, for those of you that were on the Assembly or around as observers, it took an incredible amount of time for the Assembly to hear all the budget hearings and for those members that were on Appropriations Committee to have to hear it twice. So what we're trying to do is kind of streamline that time so that we can be more productive with our time and legislate in other ways as well. So those are some of the major changes. There's some little nuanced type things throughout that you can take a look at. And if you have any questions, kind of a general gist of it.
Okay, thanks, Greg. And thank you for taking this on. This is obviously a very needed task to take on. This is new business, and it is a charter change, so Greg will only entertain questions, and then next week we'll debate and discuss. We'll discuss and debate. Speaker's list is now open. Representative Andrews.
You wrote the entire document, which I'm sure was needed. What is, to you, the biggest change that has taken place in the document?
I think the, one of the other things, too, is that I hope to next week have something that would change the structure of the Appropriations Committee, which I think if we're able to do that for more SBA members on it, and make it a true, subcommittee, if you will, with more SBA members, the ability where the Appropriations Committee does its job and appropriates, report the action of that committee, and then at the end of the process, submit the final slate of here are the allocations, and then that is something that's approved by the assembly, but not having two budget hearings. I don't think that's a productive use of time. And I think if the assembly wants to allocate money in that way and act as the appropriating body, and give it the appropriations committee. And that's my opinion. I think both based on the committee structure that we have, and the nature of the student assembly to do more things than just hand out money. I think that cultural shift of we don't need to care everything. There's some groups that come in with flawless budgets, and it's a clear done deal. This is what they should get. And I think it's going to be the job of the vice president for finance to say, hey, here was the vote on this one. This to this, it was a close vote. And then for someone on the assembly to say, well, hey, I think we should hear that, or I was an appropriations committee member, I want to discuss this at the assembly. And I think that's the biggest fundamental change within this. And then also trying to streamline the process in terms of papers and copies and the process.
Is that changing here right now, the adding the number of appropriations, or is that completely separate from the chart?
That's the makeup of the committee structure outlined in this chart.
So essentially the biggest change is going to be how the appropriation committee will decide it, and then the assembly is going to be more of a three.
The assembly will act as a approval or disapproval board, and not as a funding hearing board.
Okay.
That's the job of the appropriations committee to hear the funding request and take the merits of that and then report their actions back.
And where is that in the document located?
Pardon?
What part? What exactly? What is the second B or of the document like that?
B.
Some of that
language has to be tweaked a little bit, fixed a little bit better. But we wanted to get it introduced today so that we could continue to move forward in that way.
And just before we move on to the speaker, let's just provide a bit of historical context for all those in the room that have been through the bonding funding process last year. The appropriations committee had hearings for every bond funded group, and then the same hearings happened again at the SA level. In fact, it was literally, that's how it was. There was two hearings of almost the identical hearing. And that was because, so essentially the Appropriations Committee is a committee of the Student Assembly. So we can disapprove of any committee's actions by a two-thirds vote. So what this does is just treat how the Appropriations Committee, how it should be treated as a committee. So instead of bringing the hearing back to the Student Assembly automatically and us voting to approve or voting to disapprove, there is the opportunity each week for the SA to disapprove, but it's not automatic that the hearing has to come back because of the fact that over half these groups, it's usually just agreed upon. You don't need that second hearing. It'll be spelled out, I think, more next week. All right. Hold on mic a little. Sorry.
The second day really does not change the process that was laid out. Did they say it pretty literally?
Yeah.
Okay.
The thing of wind.
It doesn't really change the process that much. The thing is, in the last
charter, it wasn't actually followed. So right now, Appendix A says that the Appropriations Committee is actually supposed to come up with a complete budget to bring an open legislation to the SA by the fifth meeting in the fall semester, which has not happened, ever. What this proposes is pretty much the same process, except now it has until November 1st to present that full proposal to the SA at the point the SA can amend it like regular piece of legislation.
Thank you. VP Basil.
All right. Keep in mind that I'm coming to a question eventually. I have extreme reservations about everything, all the changes that have been made, especially to Parts B and C, Part C particularly, in the Appendix A changes. I think that, you know, in the real world, there exists both a committee structure as well as a legislative structure to debate every issue twice. So that there really is no opportunity for things to be pushed through really quickly. I think that by basically what's going to happen for all the Assembly members effectively is that the Appropriations Committee is going to vote on something. It's going to be presented as an announcement. You're going to have the opportunity. You're expected to have read the budget packet on your own time beforehand, and then you'll have the opportunity to dissent if you want to. It's going to be very quick. It's going to be very cursory, and I don't like it. I think that there's a lot of problems with us just pushing through byline funding because we're dealing with $2.5 million, more than that, every single year. And I have a lot of concerns about that. Are you concerned about that?
No, I'm not. I think that's where it comes down to who's leading the Assembly next year and how it will be pushed through or not pushed through. I think it's up to the chair to either, you know, make it a quick announcement or a discussion of sorts. I think that it is our job as student leaders to do our advance work, to do our homework before meetings start. I don't think we should take all of the Assembly members' time being ill-prepared and trying to come up with, you know, questions right off the top just by reading through something in the middle of a meeting. So I think we should, because of the important nature of the funding application process and the byline funding process, the Assembly next year will have to do a student diligence, have to be responsible to the students that it represents, to do that due diligence in advance and then bring it to the Assembly with questions or concerns and take an active role in the Appropriations Committee so that more legislation can get through the student assembly and it just doesn't become a funding board for a year.
All right, moving on. This is questions only, so you can express your opinion as much as you want next week when we discuss and debate. Representative Hotella.
Just real fast, I had a question about Section 4, Part 8.3, where you say, by noon on Friday of the third week in which classes are held in a set year. Do you mean this upcoming year, so a byline coming year, or is your list being set? You see what I'm saying?
No.
Procedure.
Representative Craig.
Having sat through a byline planning process myself last year, I'm also, you know, trying to analyze Section C. It poses a little bit more of a question than Representative Bailey did. One thing that I noticed a lot of times having opportunities, specifically as a new member, as a freshman on the Assembly, was valuing getting the decisions laid out to me and hearing both the Appropriations take on it as well as the groups take on what happened, and losing that in terms of having this presentation not be there, do you feel as though we as an Assembly can immediately take part into a decision per se, by just as Representative Basil said, reading sort of an announcement and going along with that?
I think that the way that which the decision is reported will be key to this. I don't think it'll be like, all right, so we decided to give folks a $13, SASC $75, and Big Red Sports Pass $4. I don't think it'll be like that. My vision for this,
this is something that for next week I'll have more clearly laid out, but I think that there should be like a decision report sheet, if you will, which says the group, the name, the rationale of the appropriations committee, and if the group would like to submit some sort of comment or statement, they can do that if they'd like.
Given,
I'd be more than happy to add those type of changes or that type of form so that it isn't just an announcement and it's more of a formal, you know, here is what the decision was, here's why, here's what the group's reaction to that was. And if the group says, hey, that's great, then why are we wasting the group's time bringing them back in, having to present twice?
Do you feel as though, at least in my opinion, I felt that the groups really enjoyed the opportunity to have the chance to advocate and to advocate on their behalf in front of other views? I think that was something that they really enjoyed. Do you think that, you know, groups are necessarily being totally for this?
And as a Greek liaison and an appropriation committee member last year, seeing the what you refer to as enjoyment, I don't know if I necessarily say that groups enjoy or like that process at all. I think it's a very painful process for them. I think it's a very inefficient process for them. And I think it's our responsibility to put a committee in place that's representative of the students. And you know, with your regards to the freshman comments, when we change the structure of the MSC, maybe that's something where we put in there, you know, one seat is reserved for a new student rep that is elected in the fall. They can have an opportunity to share in that experience as well, but I think that's a valid point. So that's something we definitely can consider, but I don't think that, you know, by any means, we're not allowing them time to advocate their concerns.
Okay. Before Senator Cusick, will groups still have the opportunity to appeal to the SA?
Yeah.
Okay. Representative Cusick.
Hi, just a quick question about Section E, the Student Assembly Appropriation Process. E1 says the Assembly shall not adopt the recommendation of the Appropriation Committee. Is that independent of what you intend to send to us? Is that like final recommendation?
And the same meeting that it's proposed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the final recommendation?
Yeah, like the final, like, here's what the student committee will look like in its entirety, will be presented, and then it will be sat on, and then it will be voted.
That goes to the Board of Trustees, not, you know, not all the places know that. That will be the document that goes to the Board of Trustees that we've approved.
Okay, thank you.
Is it you?
Yeah. V.T. Miller. Great work. Good reform going on here. Question for you. You kind of alluded earlier to having more SA involved, not only appropriations committee. Do you have any specific numbers right now in the plan, or is that something we're ready from next week?
That's next week. I don't have any specifics in mind. I'm happy to take suggestions. The card right here, maybe afterwards if people have some ideas that we want to talk about in terms of numbers and balance and what's there appropriate. I'm happy to entertain those.
I'm on the appropriations committee myself, but maybe for everybody else, would you go into the specifics right now in the appropriations committee this year, how many are SA members and how many are not?
Off the top of my head, I have no idea. So
I believe it's about four non-SA members right now and about seven, eight or so SA members. I could be incorrect. That's why I was going to direct it to you. And my last question is, would you still be looking for student non-FA involvement next year on the appropriations committee as well?
Oh, absolutely.
Great.
I don't want it to be like a mini FA, but just have your FA.
Great, thanks. Before I move on to the second speaker's list, anyone that would like to speak that hasn't the first time? All right, Andrews.
I go through all this, but basically, would you consider holding off the vote on this and the vote on your charter change management on the day of 17?
Is this or can
we
Can you
give him the mic?
Presumably, by
by internal election during your
official meeting. Six, that was?
Yes.
Okay.
And 9 undergraduates at large. And I believe the committee is doing that right now, which is difficult.
Yes.
Okay. And in fact, I think Hurricane will look back at the minutes from the spring of 2004 once they discussed the process we're talking about now. One of the things that they mentioned is the desire to change to a different ballot. They didn't act on that, but they
okay. So currently 9 non-SA, 6 SA. I'll make sure that that resolution is on business of the day before we do this next week.
So we can vote on that next week.
Correct.
Salem.
So, was the appeal process so or was it the same way?
A group could appeal the decision of the corporation committee to the assembly.
Yeah. Any, no one else on the speaker's list? Dyke.
So in under procedure section 4, A3, it says, but everything that's due actually the full application. And I was wondering how you felt about, I have a resolution today, but I think it would actually might work better as a change of your changes, if you might be agreeable to that, which since we're voting on next week, we could debate next week also. But how would you feel about adding at the very end of that after the not to exceed 2 pages describing how the applicant intends to use funding, something in a bullet point to also include it, 1 or 2 pages limited environmental impact and mitigation statement. Just make it a change in there. You find that friendly?
Absolutely.
Yeah, cool. Would that be better in Appendix B, Ari?
These are requirements, these are basically things that you want to consider when deciding how much money the organization should get, so.
Is that what you're looking for? So this is Appendix A.
Yeah, Appendix A.
Before, yeah.
Yeah, so I think that is more, I find more making this better here, because these are more like what's in the application, and it might be more incentive not for them to still look into doing that.
Okay.
Based on the nature of a resolution, I will attend and read.
Okay. Great. No more, I have no one else on the speaker's list. All right. That concludes the discussion around Appendix A. We'll discuss it and debate and vote next week. So next on new business we have, please note this Resolution 24 is mitigation of environmental impact by violent funded groups. 26, 5. It's 25. On your agenda it's 26, please change it to 25. So are you going to pull that or are you going to still want to?
Yeah, I mean, I'm willing to talk about it if people want, but I think it would be better to change the line.
Okay, why don't you, we'll pull the resolution, but just informally kind of just give a little brief overview. Yes, yeah.
Okay, so the Environmental Committee, even starting last semester, has really been talking, the discussion started talking about the SAFC process, and if there was a way to incentivize funding for groups on campus if they were doing anything more environmentally friendly, especially with, like Mike Walsh was saying last week, everyone in the university was doing. Excuse me, and the cost savings that are typically associated with being more environmentally friendly and sustainable. So start some from there. And at first we were thinking about how to put it into that. And then with the forming of the task force, we decided it would be best that we just always have a representative at the task force and we get something pushed in through there as they were forming. And then we were starting looking at violence on the groups, and we realized that was even a better place to look because some of the groups we were really targeting were like concert commissions, UPD, UPNite, things like that, the class councils, which put on really huge events. And we think it's really important on this campus to promote and distribute information about how to plan green events and things like that that can really save money and be sustainable in lots of different ways. And teaching people through their Cornell experience with these events how, like if they know how to plan sustainable events now when they leave Cornell and go on to do all their entrepreneurial things and whatnot, they'll take that with them and make the world a better place for them, like keep going. So that's where it starts. Then in targeting those groups, a lot of those are byline funded groups, even though SASU is also, but then it gets reallocated. So we were targeting really byline funded groups. So this was basically just a way to get in to byline funded groups to think about that and planning all their events because we made it part of their application process to have them submit some sort of environmental mitigation impact statement. So that's where it all came from, and hopefully we'll get it into Appendix A and work with them next week.
Great. Thank you, Emma. Salem.
Will there be any standard like format or way that they're going to be able to measure their emissions?
Well, we have to figure out the best way to do that because a lot of these groups probably won't know how to do everything that we are would like them to be able to do. But so some of the things, like looking at your carbon footprint, there are things ways you can do online that you kind of estimated that. And if with the application materials weren't obviously good, give them a few ideas of how to plan your investment, see if they can look into those when they're figuring out their budget to submit with their application. So that okay. sort of thing. We could do, I guess I'd work on what the applications we want there to be specific, like application questions about, which there would be in the BSR for itself, just said what a few things you want that to include. So it's just in the appendix, you just include like your personnel, and they include these three things.
No, yeah, I was just asking because it's important just to tell them.
To clarify exactly what to do. Yeah, definitely.
Okay, Representative Craig.
My question discusses a little bit on timing of this statement. I know wildlife hunting groups, when they apply for this process, a lot of, there are already a lot of sort of stipulations and standards that they need and some fits that sort of thing. When are you expecting to do this? If it's during that time period, I'm just worried that, you know, that's another thing that they have to necessarily worry about and they restrict the funding just by nature.
Well, I'm hoping that if we get these things kind of figured out now, they will have their initial thing to do in April 25th, and this won't have to be a part of that, but they'll know about it by then, and then next fall, the 3 weeks of the semester when their whole application is due, I personally think it's reasonable if they know about this semester and it's due next semester and planning that they could do that. It won't be super extensive. It'll be like two or three questions, and it might even really help them, especially because we're saying look to shift your costs and do things better.
So it would be handed in with the bylaws on your
package? That's what I would like for it to be, yes.
Representative Pella.
My question was pretty similar to Randy's, so I think I pretty much answered, but I do have a question. What would happen, I mean, I guess it's something you're going to be thinking about, but if a group did present their actual mitigation statement or some sort of environmental footprint and it was unacceptable, is that the grounds for disqualification and for funding, or how's it going?
I guess I personally have zero control over, I mean, unless I'm on probation sphere and whatnot, over how much money they actually get and everything. So it's possible that this is something that people on campus really want to push through and they fill it out and completely ignore to do nothing about. So that's very possible. So I honestly don't know how to make it something that we can incentivize, which we might not be able to do at all, or how to make sure they do it. So if you're ready, let me know.
VP Basil. I have two questions. One, how would this work for SAC? Because SAC funds 600 student organizations.
That's why we left it out. I mean, I know SAC in general is violent funded, but their application process, that's why we kind of stayed away from that in this resolution. We had them included with a few different stipulations. And where we thought we'd go with that is we have no idea where the task force is going to go. I mean, I was at the first meeting at this, with the task force reforming SAC, or what they might possibly do, and we have no idea how to say anything that we would like environmentally put in that because we have no idea what will come out of that. So eventually when we see their proposal, we'd like to work with them to see if there's any way, like another quick question on the application, like do you plan to do anything on this, or if SAC and one of their incentivizing like how you get more money is if you present ways you're going to be more sustainable and reach out to other people. So we have to see where the SAC goes that process before we thought we could change it.
I'm just like a little reluctant to get behind this based on the fact that there are no standards, that all that you're asking for is basically a statement, so that it really seems like it's just sort of, I think that it would be more useful to really provide a resource for groups to come to you guys and to get that kind of feedback to work with you and come to, you know, develop more sustainable solutions rather than to have to submit a statement of, you know, carbon inventory. Because I think that, you know, realistically, we're not going to go to CU EMS and say, drive your cars less, you're polluting. You know, like, don't drive the drunk person to the hospital. So I think that, like,
there are definitely circumstances where this can apply, which is why we tried to make it a little more general, and it might come across the case because of that.
I think that my only question is that basically, in terms of like holding out sustainability as a carrot and a stick to get more money, I don't think is the right way to go about making groups more sustainable, especially in the violent funding process. So that's just my two cents.
Yeah, no, that definitely makes sense. That's why it's not exactly linked. I'm kind of answering Alex's question. I think I might have done that. It's not exactly linked, or I don't know any way we have the power to do that, to make it an incentive. But to at least get them saying that. If they have to fill out something like, oh wow, we really are doing this, and we have a lot of information and guides, and we have a whole presentation on event planning and things like that, that if we could just link it up to like, why are you doing that application, and look on this, and they could say, oh, you know what, if we do this idea, we'll save like $10,000, maybe we can still get $10,000 and have an extra program. So we're hoping that they'll possibly, on their own good merit, look at it and try to expand themselves.
Representative Andrews.
Just forcing the groups to think about it, think about their impact on the environment, can't do that thing. There's a requirement to get funding, I think, would be a good way to force them to do it. But how would groups actually calculate this carbon footprint? That's what I wanted to do, because personally, I have no idea.
Well, on here it says inventory, and I meant to change that to footprint, because they're slightly different, not really, but, and footprint is usually a lot easier. If you go online to a lot of different websites that have simple things you can kind of plug in, and they ask you, like, questions like, do you use this, do you use this, and, like, prompt you, oh, I actually use this, and so there's definitely things like that. And you can, I, myself, or anyone else on the environmental committee next year, or whoever, can definitely be a resource for that, and while they're filling it out, can come to us, or, like I said, it could be a link to some of those things.
Maybe you should as you go, and as some kind of thing, maybe you should think about putting a line in there, suggesting how they can calculate it.
Okay. I prefer that.
Yeah, I know a lot of people are on the speaker list and maybe want to suggest things, but just because it's kind of a general idea that we're just, you know, informally bringing up, obviously nothing would, we're not really going to entertain anything in the independent day unless all these details are hashed out. So I'm actually just going to end the discussion, and for next week, hopefully, Emily, if you can have, I guess, something more in detail, something more specific, right? And anyone that's still on the speaker list or who was, please forward your suggestions or feedback to Emily. But at this point, it's no sense to discuss the things are just too general. So that concludes our agenda. Our meeting is finished before 6:30. I think that's the record. So we're done.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.